Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Tonight, we will be doing an answer to the super chat of Tarmo, who wanted me to review the system's neatest trick. We will get to it after some coverage of news. I'm stunned by how intelligent Ted K is. Every time I've read something from him, he is right on point and so powerful, and his model is valid into the future. We have a book here that was written. I don't know exactly when it was written. I know the copy I have is from 2012. Maybe it was written before. But much in advance, Ted K writes things that are extremely relevant to even current day politics. And it's amazing how his framework has withstood the test of time. And he gives insight that today, even people in the current political conversation don't have understanding of his kind. They don't even know what's going on. He knew what was going on years before. But just to show you how Ted K is not the only very intelligent people here, I am intelligent too, and I made a prediction 2 years ago. I observed Elon Musk as he was talking about getting Twitter, and I said, you know what? I think that Elon Musk is on a quest of vengeance for the trans people taking his son, for one of his son being converted into a female by the trans community and the trans propaganda. And I think he's on a quest of vengeance, and he's burning inside. People who have been watching the show will remember how early I was talking about this. Well, here we go.
I see. So that's
so I was tricked into doing this, it wasn't explained to me that puberty blockers are actually just sterilization drugs. So I lost my son essentially. They call it dead naming for a reason.
Yeah.
All right, so the reason it's called dead naming is because your son is dead. So my son Xavier is dead, killed by the woke mind virus.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that would be like.
Yeah. So...
And there's lots of people in that situation now.
Right.
It's not pretty. And lots of demolished kids.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's a good reason to be the final straw.
Shut up, Jordan.
All right, so let's.
So I vowed to destroy the woke mind virus after that. And we're making some progress.
Join the club.
Yeah.
Wow, you have a moment of depth from Elon Musk, and all you find the place to say is, join the club, like, oh yeah, I was there before. Welcome. I was doing this stuff before you, Elon. Holy shit. And on top of it, it took like three sentences from Jordan's interruptions before we could get to Elon. This narcissist is a bad interviewer. Jordan, you are a bad interviewer. Bad, bad, bad. Anyways, I'm super happy to... Basically, what Elon says here is confirming that he is as much in a quest of vengeance as I had foreseen. He is pissed. And to him, he was deprived of one possibility in his line of descent. And he's not going to stay lazy and just see the world take his son. He's going to go on a quest of vengeance. And I hope that includes certainly not giving any will, any inheritance to his son, who has fallen victim to this, but also trying to fix what he calls the woke mind virus. Now, of course, the woke mind virus, it's dangerous as a term because it reduces to an exclusive what we have to fight against. We have to fight against the most radical wing of the LGBT, the trans part of the LGBT. And when they say woke mind virus, it limits to this, the subject of the revolt. And this is exactly what Ted Kaye says in The System's Neatest Trick. By directing your frustration against the most extremist opposition, you are forgetting that the whole slide there was made by all the people in between you and them. And that is a powerful insight from Ted Kaye, understanding that, you know, bashing on the nut, on the craziest of the craziest, is a very neat, he calls it a neat trick of the system, basically a tool of subversion. And we have to be careful. The bird flu says, Jeff, but what about the breakdancing dad? Yeah, well, this dad is... I've commented on him before. He's the guy who's memeing because he's on a conflict with his daughter on the internet. She's rising in fame on TikTok. And she started rising in fame, among other reasons, because she said her dad had abandoned her and he went on to do a breakdancing career. Now, the dad is, as it turns out, a very intelligent man who has his own YouTube channel, who has his own cult following of sorts. And so he replied with total debunking, showed that basically there was a divorce and he didn't have the custody of her, but he showed himself extremely present throughout her life. He has videos of her when she's a child, and he brings them to activities. And importantly, the system totally raped him in terms of divorce and took millions from him. I mean, it's unbelievable to me that he would pay this, but he did pay this. Millions of dollars to your ex. Can you believe this? I have organized my life so that I would never pay a dime. But apparently this guy paid happily the millions of dollars. So anyways, that was the old story, but they are re-memeing recently, and people are accusing me of saying that he should disown her. And that's what he did recently. That's why I applauded to his video recently, because he removed her from his will because she started pushing LGBT propaganda, saying that she was bisexual. And he's like, she's just a white privileged kid. I mean, I know because I'm her father. I've paid the millions that made her life possible. So she's a white privileged kid trying to have an item of victimization because she's trying to elevate herself in the Californian leftism and TikTok streaming, and so she presents herself as bisexual, and he cut her out of his will. That is a genius move, and you know, to people who are accusing me or saying that I'm rooting for a deadbeat dad. Whoa, wait a minute. He's already debunked the idea that he was a deadbeat dad. He's a millionaire dad who has, if anything, cared too much for his children. Like, you will spoil and waste a child by giving them millions of dollars. Are you insane? Now, if anything, he's been too generous, but that's not a deadbeat dad for sure. That is not a deadbeat dad. And in fact, I refuse the category of deadbeat dad as a whole. You are expecting cash from dads. That's why you're stuck with deadbeat dads. But fathers have other things to contribute to their children's life than cash. The reason you have a concept of deadbeat dad is that you expect infinite flows of money. In fact, in the absence of even giving the father's rights, you take children from parents, and then you expect them to convert all of their care into cash. That is not a choice that fathers have to do. That is not a choice that all fathers can do. And so the category deadbeat dad to me is simply a reflection of an extremely androgynous position that male service to the parental care is convertible to cash. No, it's not. So you're trying to convert something to cash that's not convertible, and you're trying to do so in stealing to fathers. So I encourage every single father in the world who is subjected to divorce courts and the deprivation of his parental rights to find all possible means not to pay child support of any kind. Child support is illegal theft, as far as I'm concerned. Dave Portnoy says, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills when the left calling Trump a threat to democracy when the Dems didn't let their own party vote for their candidate.
Okay, I gotta do another rant here. And I'm gonna get, hey, pizza man, stick to pizza. Hey, sports guy, stick to sports. People are sending that. Hey, shut up, you're dangerous. Ironically, I'm sure the same exact people who were so outraged when, I think it was Laura Ingraham's told LeBron to shut up and dribble a basketball. They were so outraged by that. But now, when I'm talking, they don't like what I'm hearing. Stick to pizza. If you're an American citizen, you care about this country, you're always allowed to talk about what's going on in this country. So those people who are telling me, Democrats of all people, who are always the most intolerant, which is crazy, the extreme left, when they don't like what you're saying, it's suddenly shut up, no debate. So you shut up. Now here's this rant. Again, I'm a libertarian. I'm very much pro-choice. I don't agree. I'm not religious really at all. So there's a lot on the right I don't agree with. But I fucking hate the left. I fucking hate the extreme left. And they are reminding me.
Yeah, he's not getting to the point. I'm tempted to say, just like New Guy, pepperoni and bacon, please.
Why I cannot vote for them. And I cannot vote for Kamala. Because not even that they're trotting out Kamala now and they whacked Joe Biden, just like I said they were going to. They trotted him out for the debate. The fact that they've hid for years that he was a head of lettuce from the American public. It's not that they go and say, hey, all these videos that the American people see of Joe Biden literally having a dementia moment and being out of it, deep fakes, not real. And then they just reverse course and literally.
Sir, this is a Wendy's, says DK Shadow. Well, it looks like we're never going to get to his point. But yeah, apparently later in this video, he does make a point that I agree with. The left saying that Trump is a threat to democracy, when this whole Joe Biden thing was orchestrated to crown someone. And it seems like they're headed toward crowning Kamala. I wouldn't be 100% sure yet. But we've had Nancy Pelosi side with Kamala Harris today. I mean, now you have the approval of Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi. It does seem like there is an agreement within the elite of the party to be putting forward Kamala Harris. And what a bad idea. I have to have a conspiracy theory here, because you can't be that bad as to think that Kamala will suddenly develop a love from the will receive a massive surprise amount of love from the American people. People really hate her. She is annoying in the way she speaks. I mean, there was an old Trump interview that they pulled yesterday, and Trump was like, "It's weird. It's weird. She talks in poems or rhymes. She says, the bus that would welcome people so they can be seated in the bus, because that's what buses do, you know, getting people in the bus to seat." And Trump made an imitation of Kamala. He was like, "It's weird. It is weird, absolutely weird." All I can say about the RNC is that Trump and those who run the RNC had one job: move whites to the right by 1 point. Yet it seems everything they're doing is to simply lower white turnout and gain marginally with minorities. Yes, again, I've said it again and again, this thing, it's worrying how bad the political strategists are. They keep going after this middle-of-the-ground black vote that never turned out. It never turned out for the Republicans. You can literally give houses to black people. They will find a way to lose the house. 3 years later, it's in ruins. And they won't vote for you on top of it. That is what we learned from George Bush. Even if you give a house to a black person, you don't fix their life and they don't vote for you. But yeah, so they're going for that extremely costly vote. You know, every single black vote that you genuinely convince with the same effort, if you had just worked on white turnout, whites are still the majority. Whites are still a massive political group in America. You cannot leave them behind. I hope that we are getting deceived and that Trump has a secret game in mind and that he's going to come out, you know, he's thinking, I'm going to win the minorities and everything, and then I'm going to wait for, I don't know, September, and then from September on, it's going to be white, white, white. It's going to be like our super chatter, white, white, white. It's going to be Jared Taylor white. I mean, you can always hope, but it's looking like this is not the Trump strategy and that we're headed toward a continuation of the slide of the Republican to normie satisfaction, NPC centrism. And this is what Ted Kaye had described as white boy autumn, says Naberius. That would be an interesting concept. Meanwhile, people are so convinced that Joe Biden, at this point, since his letter, he hasn't even come out publicly, so people were spreading the rumor that perhaps he's dead. So they had to make a call to show that he was still alive.
Joe, are you watching? You hear this clapping? Can you see it?
I'm watching. I'm watching.
I knew it. Joe, are you watching?
They had Joe Biden in audio intervening in the press conference so that they would get some proof of life. I mean, yeah, this woman, the more she is on camera, the more people hate her because it's her cackle, it's her... There's something wrong there, something wrong. By the way, did they just do surgical surgery on this woman? Because she looks 20 years younger, but not from 20 years ago. She looks 20 years younger from, like, last week. She looks like she's been Asianized. There's been some surgery going on, hasn't there?
And in this campaign,
Okay, maybe it was the angle and the pixelization, because no, she still looks like an old woman.
Proudly put my record against his. As a young prosecutor, when I was in the Alameda County...
So she goes on to claim that she knows about criminals. She knows about rapists and fraudsters, and so she knows about Donald Trump. They took a video from the window that the Secret Service had access to give you an idea of where the Secret Service was located during the shooting. You'll remember that they decided the roof was too slopey, I don't know how you guys say it. So they put the Secret Service agents in the building. Now, look at the angle that they had on the shooter. The shooter was something like here, baby, here. They had direct access through the window. If they anyhow looked outside, if they anyhow looked outside, they would see that he's right there. They would have him in their aim. I mean, it's almost ridiculous that this guy was taken out by a counter sniper that was yards in that direction when it seems that they had an agent right in his back that could have shot from close range. Unbelievable. They had to take cover. It was dangerous out there, says Barnaby Brutto. Well, the whole idea of police and Secret Service force in those instances is to face the danger so that there's not a multiplication of victims. It lends some level of credence to the most aggressive conspiracy theories. Like it's like they rolled a red carpet of possibilities to this guy. And this is an important post by the Oversight Project. Now, it uses a technique that is not super reliable at all times. It can make errors. It can mistake cell phones of other people. But they tried tracking all the cell phones using this technique of, I think that's what they do. They have a technique to trace the proximity of cell phones to routers. Like, you know, if you go to the McDonald's, there's a Wi-Fi there. And the Wi-Fi network, if your phone tries connecting to it, leaves some degree of electronic trace because your phone has a unique address. DK Shadow says it's the MAC address. That is one thing that it has. It also has a cell phone kind of network ID. And with the attempts of connection of this cell phone with the Wi-Fi networks and the cell phone network, you can know where the cell phone was and you can know historically everywhere it's been with a certain degree of geographical uncertainty, but close enough to that building that it tried connecting. Now look at what they found. We found a device linked to Crook's work that traveled to Butler, PA on July 4th and July 8th. The device stopped all activity on July 12th. So that could be a burner phone that perhaps he had. So that would indicate two days of observation of the site before the attempted killing or the attempted assassination. Or it could be someone else. I mean, we have to find this cell phone and determine if there were accomplices. Someone who regularly visited Crook's home and work also visited a building in Washington, D.C., located in Gallery Place. This is in the same vicinity of an FBI office on June 26th. So we're talking about here the 14 days, the 16 days preceding the assassination. So you have one of the phones that was detected in Crook's home. It made some travel to the site, observed the site, came back, and then the phone totally disappeared like a burner phone. Then you have this other phone that made it into Washington, D.C. from Pennsylvania. Washington, D.C., close to an FBI office, in just the building beside the FBI office. This is something that could be a meeting between an informant and an FBI agent, or it's an FBI agent, but that wouldn't want to be recognized, you know, in the cameras around the FBI building, so goes in the side building for lunch, maybe, with a supervisor. This happened on June 26, 16 days before the shooting. Can we have some information about what this phone, who owns this phone? I hope that someone is communicating this info to the police. New guy says the FBI will figure it out. That's the problem. Another device linked to Crooks visited Plymouth, Massachusetts, went around the Logan International Airport in Boston, Massachusetts, and took a Boston flight. On August 30, 2023, one device linked to Crooks visited Allegheny Arms, so perhaps a site where Crooks could have bought the arm, or his father could have purchased the weapon. Here's all the relevant locations within Bethel Park that are linked to both Crooks' home and place of work. So they've localized the many sites in which there is repeated hanging out of the people who are either Crooks himself, or they somehow found themselves close to the home of Crooks. This is a wonderful analysis. I really love that this technique is available, although it's not a technique that allows you to find definitive conclusions. It's a technique that opens up very, very scary hypotheses when you think about it. The idea that the FBI could have been in on it. Maybe there was a meeting between a family member of Crooks and the FBI. Did they share worries? Were they knowing something that they were sharing? That would be interesting to know. Puzim says, how do we know those trackings are true, though? Well, you have to trust that the investigator has done diligent work, but we know it's possible. It's been done before. It's been done in the case of the killer, Schoenberger, something like this. It's been done in his case where they were tracking his location. And, he was a student of criminology. And he ended up killing three or four people. Senator Ron Johnson reveals preliminary findings from attempted assassination of President Trump. Preliminary findings. Secret Service did not attend a security briefing provided by local special weapons and tactics, SWAT, and sniper teams the morning of July 13th. So they miss a local agents, knowing the ground, knowing the territory, perhaps knowing about this building being a dangerous site. They don't show up. 2, local law enforcement said communication were siloed and they were not in frequent radio contact directly with Secret Service. So a split between the local law enforcement and the federal forces. Local law enforcement notified command about Crooks prior to the shooting and received confirmation that Secret Service was aware of the notification. So here you have the devil of delegation again. I've said it, the devil is in the delegation. And here you have a bunch of police, they do their local work. And their local work is to identify threats. They saw Crooks. They say, oh, that's a threat. They relay the information to the team that has the federal agents, the counter snipers, potentially much more electronic tracking measures. And that federal team tells them, don't worry, we got him. Don't worry, we're following him. What else can you do if you're a local policeman, Following the shooting, Secret Service was seen on the roof of the American Glass Research building with local law enforcement. Photos of the shooter were sent to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms for facial recognition. And 5, Secret Service was initially not going to send snipers to the rally, according to local law enforcement. So last-minute decisions in the organization of who and what kind of defense we will have at the site. Blessed Blessing says there has been absolute silence, zero mainstream media on Crooks' motives. The reason for this mainstream silence on shooter motive is twofold. 1 is parents' religion. It's the same as Pennsylvania Governor Shapiro. There has not been a shooter from this faith. And okay, I don't know yet, but yeah, I am also very thirsty for more psychological insight into the motives. I've been waiting to make a show about this since the day of the shooting. We have got nothing. What was he, the one kid of this generation that never goes on social media, or are they retaining information? They've been retaining information before. And before, what was it? The shooter of a Christian school was basically an LGBT terrorist shooter. It took us years to get the manifesto for it. And we've had the manifesto within days for all right-wing shooters. So basically, whenever someone is siding with the system, they get the privilege of having their information about their religious beliefs and manifestos kept private. Whereas when it's a white supremacist, you can be sure that it's on CNN the next day. Dearborn, Michigan is now America's jihad capital and has descended into civil war. The city of Dearborn, Michigan has been bestowed with the title of America's jihad capital and has fallen into civil war with itself over the war in Gaza. So those are pro-Gaza protests that are causing trouble and regrouping counter protesters that are pro-Israel against the Muslim protesters for Gaza. What else do we have? Joe Biden's fuck you. Biden mega donor refuses to fundraise for Kamala Harris. While America digest the unprecedented social media resignation of Joe Biden from the 2024 race, mega donor John Morgan on Sunday announced that he will not fundraise for the Democrats if Kamala Harris is the nominee, and suggested that Biden's decision to endorse her 30 minutes after he announced he was pulling out was a fuck you to those who pushed him out. Ah, so perhaps Joe Biden, from this guy's point of view, and he's a donor, Joe Biden may have been somehow frustrated that he was pushed out, but also acknowledging that he couldn't go on without his puppet masters, that he couldn't go on without his funders. And so he went out, but at the same time, he gave them a knife hit with a poison knife. He made them certain to lose because he endorsed Kamala. Well, that's interesting. So from the perspective of this donor, he feels betrayed. He feels betrayed that he spent all this money to make Joe Biden keep going. Joe Biden betrays him, and perhaps Joe Biden follows his advice by leaving. But at the same time, he makes sure that Kamala gets the priority on endorsements, and that's not what he was seeing. Well, interesting. Even when there's a kind of monarchic style of crowning, there's always fights internally between these elites. And here we have an internal elite fight that seems to be showing up. Lendald Guntram says, not just a knife, a poison knife. Yeah, you know, like the Phantom Assassin in Dota. And it's like when you receive the dagger hit, it slows you down. Rodi Lucid says, donors want assurances that they will get a return for their donations. Maybe Kamala hasn't said she would give him a return and he had assurances with Biden. Well, exactly. I mean, from a donor perspective, it's money thrown out the window. When a new gang takes over, the secret promises that are not on the record precisely because they would be illegal, they would be bribery. So basically, their whole bet is to throw money at the system with the hope that their guy, their horse, will win the race. if their horse gives up, it's money thrown into absolutely a dumpster. You're full of shit. Secret Service director grilled. Says agency has no radio communications from the assassination attempt. Numerous Republican and at least one Democrat lawmaker demanded that Cheadle resign from her position, saying that her agency fell short of its zero-fail mission. Well, definitely that was an absolute fail. All right, so for the conclusion of the show, let us do a complete review of The System's Neatest Trick, a book by Ted Kaczynski, available at the Anarchist Library or something. So Ted Kaczynski, of course, is a very intelligent guy who became known as the Unabomber, a man who was sending bombs through mostly the mail and through other methods to attack people engaged in technological progress, because he had gone on this idea that we must revolt against technological progress because the logical end conclusion of technological progress is societal control and ultimately a much lesser form of humanity surviving into the future, a humanity that is enslaved. Enslaved both by itself and by the technological machines that we make. So Ted K, I hadn't read him before I wrote The Revolutionary Phenotype. But eventually I got to reading him and was very impressed. Very impressed by how our teams connect and how he had seen a lot of the stuff that science could have helped him to see further, science like the theory of phenotypic revolution, but that without that science, he had gone very far in understanding where we were headed. And he quotes Jacques Ellul, who is also a kind of man of technological resistance. The supreme luxury of the society of technical necessity will be to grant the bonus of useless revolt and of an acquiescent smile. The system has played a trick on today's would-be revolutionaries and rebels. The trick is so cute that if it had been consciously planned, one would have to admire it for its almost mathematical elegance. So the idea of the system's neatest trick is that there are baits presented to potential revolutionaries by our system. And the system is not defined. It's a short writing of Ted K. And he says, I don't mind about how you would define the system. The precise definition, we could argue on it for hours. But he thinks that it's easy enough to perceive the set of entities he's talking about. Precisely, they are not embodied entities. The system is not a man, nor is it a corporation, nor is it a political party. I would say that it closest to the definition of the system that he uses in this writing is my term that I've been introducing a couple of years ago, the normiplex. The ensemble, the kind of moving blob of this normie society. I think that the normieplex kind of falls exactly where Ted K wanted to use the term the system. From the view of Ted K, the system is very much progressivism, as we would call it today. He's talking about those people who subscribe to all sorts of activism for women, activism for minorities, activism for the rights of animals. So basically, what we would see today as the unhinged left. But precisely, Ted K as a critic to say to anyone who would concentrate only on the most unhinged aspects, he's saying in this book, you can't just take the craziest nuts And because they are there precisely to attract your ire. Of course, it's very easy to take the blue-haired feminist far left and say, well, her feminism is dangerous. But the reality you have to see is that her feminism is probably so extreme that even the normies reject it. That ultimately her feminism is so extreme that it attracts your critique, while the other form of feminism, which is even more damaging to society because precisely centrist feminism is successful. Now, that centrist feminism makes its way through because you're too busy criticizing the far left, trans, extreme LGBT. So that's the message, I would say, the main message of Ted Kaye. Ted Kaye is writing this from the perspective of being a revolutionary, and he's been thinking in his time in jail. He's been thinking through how will we lead a fight against the system. So he's been sharing his views, and that's one of his writing that he shares with the intent of forming future resistance movement. Other things that I haven't said for those who don't know Ted Kaye. He is a man who was a mathematician. He was a talented mathematician writing super complex technical papers. And eventually, all of a sudden, he converts toward living in nature and rejecting technological society and understanding the danger that it has for humanity. He writes, modern technology with its rapid long-distance transportation and its disruption of traditional ways of life has led to the mixing of populations, so that nowadays people of different races, nationalities, cultures, and religions have to live and work side by side. If people hate or reject one another on the basis of race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual preference, the resulting conflicts interferes with the functioning of the system. Apart from a few old fossilized relics of the past like Jesse Helms, the leaders of the system know this very well. And that is why we are taught in school and through the media to believe that racism, sexism, homophobia, and so forth are social evils to be eliminated. No doubt some of the leaders of the systems, some of the politicians, scientists, and CEOs privately feel that a woman's place is in the home, or that homosexuality and interracial marriage are repugnant. But even if the majority of them felt that way, it would not mean that racism, sexism, and homophobia were part of the system, any more than the existence of stealing among the leaders means that stealing is part of the system. Just as the system must promote respect for law and property for the sake of its own security, the system must also discourage racism and other forms of victimization for the same reason. That is why the system, notwithstanding any private deviation by individual members of the elite, is basically committed to suppressing discrimination and victimization. So here, a very solid insight on why is the system siding all the time with these leftist beliefs. It's because they're trying to create a society that is effectively unmanageable if we can't abandon racism, if we can't abandon this and that. So they are on a behavioral control program because it's the only way their desired society will come about. Lendl Guntram says, the revolutionary spirit is with us in the room. So he's sending a video. This raging, screeching lunatic is in charge of one of the largest teachers unions in America. Let's see what she says.
Let them record that we the people, united, mobilized, and voted down this existential threat to democracy and freedom, that we continued the march for progress, that we laid the foundation for a better future, and that we sought to create a more perfect union.
Okay, well, unrelated to 10K, but in a way related in the sense that here's a nut that we can attack. Here's a crazy looking woman. But Ted Kaye in his book says, careful, the most dangerous are the ones that most people wouldn't point to as crazy. There's a discussion by Suburban Elk and Fadam on the regular chat arguing whether Ted Kaye was trans. Because it's a typical reason to reject his views is that he bought into the trans stuff. Well, Ted Kaye, his story with transhood goes as follows. He just, at some point in his adult life, he was asking himself questions and he went to a psychiatrist and the psychiatrist put him on the path of questioning his gender. That was in the 70s. So before the whole propaganda had really taken into the rest of society. But you could still get that propaganda inside an intellectual milieu in a university with university psychiatrists. So he got convinced to go to a meeting and then went into that meeting with a psychiatrist. But as soon as he was in the room waiting for the session to start, he started being ashamed and understanding that it wasn't the right direction for him and that he was basically buying into a victimization discourse that he somehow was born in the wrong body, that kind of propaganda that you hear today. So he was ashamed of this moment where he questioned his gender, and really it seems that he was led down this path by poor counseling and poor coaching. So I wouldn't say that that's a sign that Ted Kaczynski was either evil or unfit to as an intellectual. I think it's fine to fall for the traps of the system, especially if you are that fast at correcting it. He never went into any form of medication or trans surgery. He just was attracted to the potentiality that it could be his mental problem. But even he understood before he even began the process that it wasn't good and it was bad for him. Fadam says he expelled the devil from within himself. Yeah, I don't judge Ted Kaye on this event, especially it's in the 70s. In the 70s, you don't even know that psychiatrists are out to get you. That, you know, psychiatrists is a bad science, basically. Today, I would be less forgiving about someone with the information levels of today, in 2024, with everything that's accessible through the internet. If you go down that line, I think you kind of know what you're doing. But in the 70s, going to a psychiatrist, asking questions, it's really not the same world. John Drake says, let's be real though, JF, you would never fall for that trap. I don't know if JF in the 70s, I don't know. Some psychiatrist tells me something. I don't have my defenses up. I've never heard of trans propaganda. They haven't been all on the news with their flags. I don't know what a 70s JF, well, you can tell by the way I walk, you know, I walk with disco playing. I don't know if I entered a psychiatrist room on that day. Fadam says, as a teenager, I could have fallen for absolutely any gaslighting trap imaginable. I was so trusting, it's insane. It is crazy. It is crazy how we kind of got lucky if we haven't fallen for the system's trap. How the system exploits the impulse to rebel. So according to Ted Kaczynski, it's a sleight of hand. The system gives you options, presence bait that can give you the satisfying feeling of having been against it. And he encompasses in this activism for gay rights, activism for women, but also Rush Limbaugh. So both on the right and the left, he sees the system is giving opportunities to for people to think that their actions are truly against it. So he says a Rush Limbaugh stands there, and you stand there as, say, a blue-haired feminist, and you have some radical discourse. You trigger Rush Limbaugh to yell against you in his radio show. Now, you have just given the satisfaction to the blue-haired lady that she was a true revolutionary. You have an etiquette, a label by the system. You've just given her a medal of honor. You have cradled her into the delusion that her actions are truly against the system, when in fact, most of her pushing for feminism can only help the system. And he's saying maybe she has some radical ideas that are truly revolutionary, but the effect of her feminism will merely be to have more women adopt the workplace. And so the effect will be moderate. Even if you have radical ideas, they get diluted, and eventually, because it's only normies that actually do act on those beliefs, they will basically filter and integrate only those ideas of yours that are truly normal and in line with the system. So that's how the system exploits the impulse. It's by giving you fake revolutionary deeds. But as you pursue these deeds, all of your actions result in helping the system. He says, so in a nutshell, the system's neatest trick is this. For the sake of its own efficiency and security, the system needs to bring about deep and radical social change to match the changed conditions resulting from technological progress. So that's his whole greater theory. Technology is creating a world in which we can't be happy because we are fundamentally unfit biologically to be enslaved that way. 2. The frustration of life under the circumstances imposed by the system leads to rebellious impulses. 3. Rebellious impulses are co-opted by the system in the service of the social changes that it requires. Activists rebel against the old and outmoded values that are of no longer use to the system and in favor of the new values that the system needs us to accept. In this way, rebellious impulses, which otherwise might have been dangerous to the system, are given an outlet that is not only harmless to the system, but useful to it. Much of the public resentment resulting from the imposition of social changes is drawn away from the system and its institutions, and it's directed instead at the radicals who spearhead the social changes. So the system has its fall guys. And you can think of even the shooter of Trump as being a fall guy of the system. This guy, Crooks, whether he was coached or groomed and it was a whole conspiracy, or whether he acted alone, he was representing a set of interests of the system. The set of interests that, and in my view, they are wrongly doing so, but they somehow perceive Trump as a dangerous fascist. Whoever wanted Trump dead was so convinced, that Trump was the worst thing that could happen to America. And it leads to a fall guy here, a guy who, even if he takes action that in a way sides with a subpart of the system, is extremist enough that he can then be rejected. And only his least extreme contribution can be ingested by the system. But one other thing where this book relates to the current news items is that I believe that what we are seeing right now, the whole rejection of the woke, the whole de-wokening of the woke, basically, because if you're telling me, like Elon Musk seems to be saying, and like all these centrist Republicans seems to be saying, if you're telling me that you want to take the beliefs of the current center, the normies, the leftists, and you just remove extreme transism of children, you just remove self-flagellation of whites by basically giving reparations infinitely to minorities until they don't exist anymore. If you're just telling me that this is what needs to be surgically removed from the left and then we're all good, that's a problem. That's a big, big problem. And Ted Kaye sees this. And I believe that what we're currently seeing is the Republicans going on the trend of doing this surgical removal, of removing only 1% of current problems. The problem is not the blue-haired, radical, super feminist or trans LGBT activist. She's 1% of the problem. The problem is this ongoing normie effort to control and toward anti-natalism and toward white self-denial. That is the problem. And this problem won't improve if you deny it. And that is the big issue. I see the Republicans are affaired at improving the left rather than combating the left. Because if you're going against the woke mind virus, what are you doing, really? You're improving the left. You're showing them, oh, look at those items that are the most triggering of your platform. If you were to remove those, you would be so much more like us. You would be basically a centrist. And that's an improvement of the left rather than a combating of the left. A true combating of the left would require a radical rejection of all of the slope that led down to the current state of affair. And it goes up to the beginning of taxation, really, and the beginning of public schools. And it goes down at the root of the things that have now flourished into anti-white crap. But we're not doing that work. Now look at how insightful he is on the current standing of civilization. He says, when the same editor looks at radical feminism, he sees that some of its most extreme solutions would be dangerous to the system. But he also sees that feminism holds much that is useful to the system. Women's participation in the business and technical world integrates them and their families better into the system. Their talents are of service to the system in business and technical matters. Feminist emphasis on ending domestic abuse and rape also serves the system's needs, since rape and abuse, like other forms of violence, are dangerous to the system. Perhaps most important, the editor recognizes that the pettiness and meaninglessness of modern housework and the social isolation of the modern housewife can lead to serious frustration for many women. Frustration that will cause problems for the system unless women are allowed an outlet through careers in the business and technical worlds. Even if this editor was a macho type who personally feels more comfortable with women in a subordinate position, he knows that feminism, at least in a relatively moderate form, is good for the system. He knows that his editorial posture must be favorable toward moderate feminism. Otherwise, he will face the disapproval of his advertisers and other powerful people. This is why the mainstream media's attitude has been generally supportive of moderate feminism, mixed toward radical feminism, and consistently hostile only toward the most extreme feminist position. So he's describing here the mechanism of dilution. And I believe that if Ted Kaye was here today, he could look at what's happening with the Republican Party and see that is also a, that is my mechanism at play. You have a rejection of the far left, but an a systemic integration of a quite leftist program in the end. A leftist statist program on the side of the Republicans. So the mechanism by which current society is shifting toward voting Trump, and in fact is now talking about Trump as a member of the system rather than an opponent of it, is exactly what's described here. It is a dilution of the ways of the system by rejection of the rebels. He says about intellectuals, because they are the teachers of young people, the university intellectuals are in a position to help the system play its trick on the young, which they do so by steering young people's rebellious impulses toward the standard stereotype targets, racism, colonialism, women's issues, etc. Young people who are not college students learn through the media or through personal contact of the social justice issues for which students rebel, and they imitate the students. Thus, a youth culture develops in which there is a stereotyped mode of rebellion that spreads through imitation of peers, just as hairstyles, clothing styles, and other fads spread through imitation. And he describes here that the system is not perfect and sometimes it overpushes. And that doesn't mean that there's not a system. He describes the example of people becoming too anti-war. So the system gives you a bait, or you're going to be an anti-war activist. But at some point, the system needs a war. And at some point, Israel needs a war. And at that point, precisely, the whole anti-war pacifist education that has been pushed starts to backlash. Now, it's not a threat to the system, because we've seen our societies continuously reorganize and basically redefine how murder is allowed in some instances and it's not allowed in other instances. And the colonization of America by whites was evil, but the colonization of Gaza by Israel is needed. We've had this again and again. So with double standards, the system is capable of adjusting to backlash against its own efforts. So I will say in conclusion that Ted Kaye is very insightful, although I will do one critique of this book. It is that thinking in system is a very dangerous endeavor. And when you think of system, you think like a leftist. And that is a very dangerous thing, that although Ted Kaye had the brilliance of not falling for the traps, the problem is when you start to anthropomorphize a system, and to the point where Ted Kaye sees intent in the system, he sees planning, intent by non-personal actors, basically by overall systems, as he describes them. The problem is you forget that in the end, all of this system, all of the movements that we see, when we see medical fascism rise and we see suddenly all normies acting like NPCs and trying to vaccinate everyone with a dangerous vaccine, all of this is ultimately a bunch of humans. It's a bunch of chimpanzee-like four-legged creatures that are fighting for their own good. And the doctor wants their cash so that he can make babies, so that he can have property, so that he can have a line of descent that's better than you. And for that, he injects a vaccine in you because he's making money from it and he's rewarded for it. And in fact, if he doesn't, he's punished. So all of the whole system of Ted Kaye is a bunch of humans. As I often say in the nature versus nurture false dichotomy, nurture is made of genes. The system is made of genes, Ted. And that's very important to understand. John Drake says, TRP is already creeping upon us. Nobody's noticing, save the chat that is. Absolutely. Isn't it a nice and honorable thing that we've done here across the years, where we stood together as a band of merry men, aware of what was to come thousands of years before other humans would eventually realize it. That is certainly a great comfort to my mind as I get old and head toward death, to have been with you guys and to have known so far into the future that people of today would not even care about asking themselves the question. Firestarter says, but Jeff, can't you say the same about TRP? It's just people who want to gene edit. Absolutely. Until it's not people anymore and it's the AI. So yes, the danger of TRP is the people who want to gene edit. Until they're not people anymore and until the gene editing is made by another entity. But absolutely, you always have to think, what is the evolutionary route of the forces I'm seeing? What's the evolutionary route of man finding woman beautiful? Well, that's easy. It's because they are objects of reproduction. We have to acquire them and reproduce with them. Okay, what is the evolutionary route of the COVID vaccine pressure? Oh, that's a little more complex. There's the doctor has some in it because he's making money. The pharmacist is making money. The school principals are kind of pushed. Maybe some of them are cashing in, but they're mostly socially pressured for social conformity. Now you start finding the evolutionary route. There has to be a reason, and most often in a social pathology, a deficiency that forms the reason of why we are this way rather than another. And yes, for the revolutionary phenotype, it's at first the humans, and then whatever replaces them in the decision-making process, those are the dangers. The bird flu says, access to the AI baby maker provided your social credit score is high enough. Oh, yes. I always hesitate to bring the question of class and social credit score and social status, because it is just a small part of the worry in a phenotypic revolution. That is it for tonight, boys. Much love, and I will see you all tomorrow. And by the way, tomorrow is our Patreon hangout. So join the Patreon or the Subscribestar at the $20 level if you want to be part of the conversation. It will be right after the regular show around 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Bye-bye. Thank you.